Good evening. I was so into my sermon, I didn't realize that somebody had come in here and brought my little Bible shelf. I was watching it, make sure I didn't make any huge mistakes, and there they came. I didn't even notice my daughter when she came in. So I just want you to know I'm giving my full attention to this. Tonight, we want to look at Joseph. Joseph, the man who had the coat of many colors, even though that probably isn't what it was. Now that we know a little more about Hebrew than we did back when that first entered into the picture, that's really not what it's talking about. It's talking about a coat that would give you honor, give you special status. And we'll see how that comes to play. Yes, we'll start out here in chapter 37 of Genesis. And let's observe something. The first five books of the Bible are known as the Law of Moses. The Torah is what the Jews call it, or Torah. And when we translate that word Torah, it is commonly translated by the English word law. That is not a good translation. Wow, we're just destroying translations right and left here. The actual noun, Torah, comes from a verb that, among other things, could be used to talk about shooting an arrow at somebody. You say, well, how did that get into this? Well, because the word basically means instruction, where a teacher casts something in the direction of those that they are teaching. Now, I'm going there to say this. This is a long story. The story of Joseph is going to go through with one minor interruption all the way to the end of Genesis. And when we think of law, we don't think about stories. But there's a lot of stories in the Torah. And so what the Torah is, it has what we call law. Deuteronomy is a place where that might be very familiar, parts of Exodus, Leviticus. But there's a lot of story, but it's all instruction. So God teaches us in a number of different ways lessons that are valuable for us, and one of the ways he teaches is through stories. When I first became a Christian, I became aware that some people have a problem with talking about Bible stories. They shouldn't, because we have stories. This is a story. And we say, you know, when you say story, people are going to think once upon a time. I don't think that. I doubt you do either. But whether you do or you don't, this isn't a once upon a time story. There's the story of Jesus. All kind of stories. So this is a story. It's a narrative. It's one of the ways that God teaches. And so we are introduced to one of Judah's, or one of Jacob's children, Jacob, who's come to be known as Israel. And we have this 17-year-old guy in verse 2 of chapter 37 by the name of Joseph. Now, Joseph was born to Israel's favorite wife. And later, there would be another child of that favorite wife that would also be sort of the apple of his dad's eye, and that would be Benjamin. So we've got these two boys that come from the favorite wife of Jacob. And so he's 17 years old. He's a teenager. He's not some little kid or anything like that. But his dad, we find out, I'm just going to be running through the text here. You can follow right along with me. His dad holds him to be special because he is the child of his favorite wife. And so he shows that to him by giving him this coat. We'll just call it a coat of many colors, but a coat that would distinguish him from his brothers. And it says in the text that Jacob loved him best. Now, one of the things we've all learned is that if you favor a child like that, it's not a good idea. And it's not. Our children are all different. We love them in different ways, but we all love them. And yet here is a man who is loving this one more. And when he gives him this coat, it's like, oh, man. And so his brothers don't appreciate that, but it gets worse. He goes to check on his brothers, you know, and he's a tattletale. How about that? He comes and tells his dad a bad report about his brothers. So that's not a good thing. But that's not all. He has a dream that he shares with his brothers. And in this dream, he's basically saying, you guys are all going to bow down to me. They really appreciate that. Then he has another dream. And he says, not only you guys, but my dad and my mother, who was deceased, are going to bow down in front of me. Now his dad, he's not too happy with that. You're saying, hey, we're all going to bow down to you? Really? Stop it. So he's not getting off on a good foot. He's kind of a brat. He has used this love of his father for him and the special things to affect his attitude. So time comes for him to go off, find his brothers, and they see him coming. They don't like him. In fact, they really, really, really don't like him because they decide that we can just kill him. And, that's pretty intense, isn't it? And there's some time bought in the situation by putting him in a pit to hope that maybe this can pass over him and it will be okay. But then this idea comes up. What if we just kill him? If we just kill him, there's nothing in it for us. So why don't we sell him and pretend like he's been killed? Yes, yes. So some Midianite slavers are coming by and they get him up out of the pit. And they sell him for 20 pieces of silver. So as they see it at this time, it's a win-win. We've gotten rid of our brother and we've gotten money for it. So that's kind of where we stop for just a moment and think about this. His brothers are not very honorable people, are they? They're willing to kill him. That's pretty bloodthirsty. He's not a particularly good guy. You probably wouldn't like him. You'd probably think he was a smart aleck. You'd probably think he was a brat. But he goes down into Egypt and he gets sold to a particularly significant person, Potiphar. Potiphar is the captain of the king's guard. And he does such a good job in his service to Potiphar that Potiphar elevates him over everything in his household. Now, all through the text, as these good things are happening to Joseph, we are again and again told that God was with him. In fact, God was even with Potiphar, causing the things of his household to prosper because Joseph is the one that is taking care of them. So, can you imagine how Joseph felt when they threw him in a pit? And he probably hears the talk, you know, let's kill him and all of that. And the next thing you know, this child of privilege, this child who got favoritism from his dad, he's with these slavers, probably not the nicest people in the world, and they're taking him down to Egypt and they're going to sell him as a slave. Can you imagine how he must have felt? Well, you know, sometimes bad things help us to get to good results. Because sometimes we're not going to do it the easy way. We probably all know people, maybe some of us out here are one of those people, that you can't do it the easy way. It's so much easier if you do it the easy way. So here he is, he's taken away from everything that made him a smart aleck. They've taken his coat away from him and everything. And he's a slave. But he didn't give up. There's something to this kid. Got something going for him. And God knows that. God's going to use him. Now, he's not from the tribe of Judah. So he's not from the kingly tribe. He's not from the tribe of Levi. So he's not from the priestly tribe. So the big things that are going to happen with the priesthood and with the king, Joseph isn't part of that. In fact, when Joseph is in Egypt, he will eventually be married to an Egyptian, and he will have a couple of children, and they're going to be two of the tribes, which are half Egyptian then and half Jew. And those two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, are going to be, Ephraim in particular, the chief tribe of the northern kingdom. In fact, sometimes when the prophets are talking about the northern kingdom, they just talk about Ephraim because they are the dominant tribe. And the northern tribe doesn't do very well. Ephraim isn't a tribe that helps keep them close to God. In fact, the first king, Jeroboam the first, Ephraim. And what does he do? He gets this really good idea, as people think. Well, if they go down to Jerusalem, to the temple, to offer sacrifices, the hearts of the people, that I've just taken 10 of the tribes in our rebellion, and we've got the divided kingdom, and they're going to gradually filter back. If their place of worship is going to be down there in the south and down there in Jerusalem, so I'll make a place to worship at Dan, the northern part of the northern kingdom, and Bethel, the southern part of the, I'm going to make it convenient for them to stay up here. And I'm going to appoint a priesthood that's not really from Levi, just from any and everybody. And I'm going to change something about when we do things in religion. I'm just going to completely reshape and reform this. And from that time on, the northern kingdom was an apostate kingdom. So the legacy of Joseph, if you want to attach it to Ephraim and to Manasseh, was not particularly good. But Joseph is good. And Joseph is used by God for one of the most important things in the history of the Jews. Because, you see, back in Genesis 15, with the beginning of that chapter, Abraham is in despair. And he doesn't have any children. And Eliezer, his chief servant, according to the Hurrian laws of the land, would be the person who inherits. And he's dismayed, and he lets God know about it. And so God has a moment with him, and he says, Abraham, you're going to have a son. You old man, past when you thought you'd have children later, and your wife, by the way, past having children, are going to have a child. But in the course of all that, in chapter 15, as he's talking about that, he says, let me tell you something about how this is going to play out. This land, you're never going to own this land. You'll have a little cave for a burial place, but I'm telling you about something that's going to happen down the road. So Abraham had to have the faith that what God was telling him down the road was the truth, and he was looking for that, and it motivated him. So he said, but, and not only that, you know what? You're going to be taken captive. Your people are going to be in a land not here. And they're going to be there for four generations, 400 years. He said, after that 400 years, I'm going to bring them out and bring them to this land that I promised you, the promised land. Okay? So all that's in the background here. And Joseph is the key because of God's blessings and his being willing to be an instrument of God's blessings for getting them back. So here he is. He's with Potiphar. He's doing a great job. He's elevated. But Potiphar has a wife. We're told that Joseph is a really good-looking guy. He's well-built and he's handsome. And Mrs. Potiphar notices this. She's not a particularly nice lady. And she offers him the chance to lie with her. And he says, no, I can't do this. Your husband has placed me over everything that he owns. He has given me this great position. He's put trust in me. He's put confidence in me. I cannot betray my God, and I cannot betray him. But does she stop? No. She keeps on, keeps on, keeps on. She's not a woman to take no for an answer. But he doesn't weaken. He could have rationalized, well, my brother sold me, and I'm in this mess down here, and I mean, who's going to know, and I might as well just do whatever. He doesn't do that. And so finally one day when he's in there with her, And she has the opportunity, she grabs a hold of him to his clothes. And he runs off, but his clothes stay there. Look! Look at what this guy did. He's making sport of me. He tried to lie with me. When I yelled out, he ran off. Well, Potiphar finds out about that, right? Now, we're told that his anger burned. But think about this. You're in Egypt. You're a foreigner. Not only are you a foreigner, you're a Jewish foreigner. And we find that this story goes along that the Egyptians wouldn't eat in the same room with somebody like that because they took care of sheep. And sheep were odious to them. And sheep herders were odious to them. So here's this guy. Under normal circumstances, you'd have to figure that he's going to be dead in seconds. So what happens to him? He's put in prison. What does that tell you? Maybe he knows Mrs. Potiphar and the kind of woman she is. And maybe he's seen enough about Joseph and his character to where he is reluctant to just have him disposed of. So Joseph finds himself in prison. He gets himself because he's a man of character and because God's with him, because God's blessing him. He finds out that, the head of the prison puts him over everything. He trusts him to take care of everything, just like Potiphar had done. So again, Joseph has arisen from this smart-alecky kid to a man who hardship has forged into a good, godly man. And here he is with God working in his life. He's got control of the thing. Now, while that happens, a cupbearer and a baker are thrown in there. And if you're a cupbearer or a baker, you got a chance to kill the king, right? Because of poison. And there's some suspicions that either the cupbearer or the baker was responsible for maybe some kind of something that ought not to have happened. So they get thrown in jail. Now, here's another interesting part that we find out. The text tells us that the captain of the guard, that's Potiphar. He's introduced to us when we first find out about him. He's the captain of the guard. We come back to him. This isn't the jail. The captain of the guard, Potiphar, is putting him over these two royal prisoners, the most special prisoners that they've got in the whole facility. He puts them in charge of making sure everything goes well with them. Because I'm thinking there's a bunch of yahoos in there, and he's got to kind of look after them. Well, they have dreams, the cupbearer and the baker. And they tell these dreams to Joseph. And Joseph says, well, God's able to make me understand this. And he interprets the dream. He says to the cupbearer, you're going to go back serving the king. You're going to be handing him the cup again. And he said, but don't forget me when that happens. Remember that I told you that, okay? And, well, the baker, not so much. You're going to die. Well, indeed he does, very quickly. So what happens when the cupbearer gets out? He forgets Joseph. And time goes on for another 2 years while Joseph is in prison. And then Pharaoh has a dream. And, wait a minute. I know somebody. When I was in prison, he interpreted two dreams, and what he said turned out to be exactly what happened. And so Pharaoh says, well, okay, because I've had this curious dream. You've got these fat cows, and then some skinny cows. And the skinny cows devour the fat cows. And you've got these really healthy-looking heads of grain, and then you got some skimpy grain, and the skimpy grain devours the healthy-looking grain. And so what does it all mean? And Joseph said, God is telling you about the future. And if it weren't for God, this is a lot like Daniel in Daniel chapter 2. If it weren't for God, I couldn't do any better than anybody else with this. As Daniel said, but there is a God who knows stuff. And that God told Daniel, and that God told Joseph. He said, let me tell you what this means. It means that you're going to have 7 years coming up where everything's going to go really well. Prosperity. But then you're going to have 7 years of famine. He says, now, if you be smart, you'll build granaries, you'll take advantage of the 7 years of plenty, and you'll put things by. And Paris says, well, you know, that's a really good idea. We need to find somebody who's really wise to manage this. And, well, who would be better than Joseph? See, God's with him again. See how improbable this is? This kid in a pit, brothers trying to kill him, gets sold into slavery, and the next thing you know, he comes to be number two man in Egypt. He only has to answer to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh trusts him with the survival of his country and the prosperity of it. He says, if you do this, people are going to want grain, and you can sell it to them. You can make a profit out of the lean years. And so he gets appointed. Now, the things that that he gets a signet ring, and gets things that would be called investiture. And you know what? If you look at these Egyptian drawings, and you look at a man who had the title of a vizier, an Egyptian vizier was given these things. And that's a person who Pharaoh puts over things to manage them. In fact, there was a tomb discovered that had a statue of a Semitic person. And there was enough of the pigment left on the paint and the hair to show that he was a red-headed guy. Egyptians don't have red hair, but Semitic people occasionally do. And many think that was, in fact, our good friend Joseph. We know he was a vizier, this man, and that he was given a lot of power in Egypt. But back to our story, here he is. He's the number two person in all of Egypt. And Egypt is a huge deal at this time. And Pharaoh prospers and Egypt prospers because of this plan that Joseph manages. Well, while the famine's happening, guess what's happening back where his family is? They've run out of food. So, okay, we'll go down and get some food. Okay, but you're not taking Benjamin. Oh, Joseph's brother by Jacob's favorite wife. You just, you know, head on down there and you do what you need to do. So I get down there and some strange things start happening. This fellow who's dressed like an Egyptian. In fact, before he went to see Pharaoh out of the prison, they got to shave his head and get him all looking like an Egyptian instead of a Semite. And I'm told he walked like an Egyptian as well. So here he is. He sees his brother. He recognizes them. Okay. How would you react to that? These guys tried to kill you. These guys messed your life totally up. What you going to do? You know, he asked about, do you have any people? You got a father. Oh, well, he's asking about his dad, right? And he got, there's a kid up there. Yeah, well, he's up there. Couldn't bring him down, but yeah, he's up there. So I says, okay, give you stuff, but I want to see your brother. I want to see him. I want him to come down. And so Reuben says, well, keep me, okay? I'll stay here, and they can go on back. And they go back. What do they find in their bags when they're going back? The money that they gave for the grain has been put back in their bags. Joseph did that. And it's like, whoa. And they go back and they tell their dad this and that, this and that. And he's like, okay. Guess what happens? They run out of food. Guess where the food is? Egypt. Guess what the brothers know they're going to have to do if they're going to get food the second time? They're going to have to take Benjamin with them. And Jacob says, no. Now, I've already lost my son Joseph. He thinks Joseph is dead. What'd they do? They took his coat, dipped it in blood, and said, here. James Meadows used to make a really good point out of that. Joseph wasn't dead. But in Jacob's mind and heart, he was as dead as if he had been. Sometimes we can be influenced by things that are not reality, but to us they are. And we act upon them just as if they were. So he says, you know, Joseph, I've lost him. I've lost Reuben. And now you're talking about Benjamin. But, you know, it's that or starve. So, Judah, I'll stand for it. I'll stand for him. I'll be the one who, or Simeon was the one who was left down there. Reuben comes up and he says, you can take my kids if something happens. But Judah says, I'll stand in his place. So they go down. They tell him, because they're afraid, hey, we found our money in our bags. And Joseph, don't worry about it. It's no problem. It's no problem at all. I'm okay with that. Way to go. Good. And they got Benjamin with them. Things begin to happen and all of that. And then finally, they are able to get the grain and they go off. And he's put the money back in the bags, but he's put his special silver cup in the bag of Benjamin. He does it for semi-nefarious reasons. Oh, look at what they've done. They've stolen stuff. Go get them. Go get them. And whoever's got that cup in their bag, we're going to kill them. Now he put it in Benjamin's bag. They catch up with him. They start opening bags. Guess whose bag has the cup? Benjamin's. It's like, oh, no. Oh, no. So they get back and Joseph says, okay, I won't kill him. But whoever had the cup, they'll be my slave. And they're going to stay here with me. So, Judah has a really special moment with his brother. He doesn't know it was his brother, Joseph. He says, look, we've got a father back home. And his heart has been grieving since his son Joseph died. Now, he didn't know what's become of Joseph. He said, if we come home and we tell our dad that this son he was trying to protect, in his mind the last son of his favorite wife, well, you know, you've lost him too. He said, it will kill him. Might as well just kill him. He'll die. He can't take it. Joseph noticed something here. These brothers who had at one point wanted to kill him, who sold him into slavery, who had to live with their father's grief thinking that Joseph had been dead all these years and having to watch him and see the effect that it had had on his life, and they loved their dad. He sees how that has worked out. And he can't contain himself. He reveals himself to his brothers. And, well, they're kind of like, oh, you're the guy that we sold into slavery. And he said, no, 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 no. Don't worry. You meant it for ill. But God meant it for good. That was how God was going to eventually fulfill his promise to Abraham that while they would go into another land and stay there for 400 years, after that, they would come out. And so God's hand is amazing. How many things that happen in our lives that we think are just matters of happenstance? It doesn't seem to be in any way unusual, but we look back and we see, man, I would have never guessed that that was part of what's happened now. Maybe it was something even we consider to be unpleasant. And we see, you know, if it hadn't been for that, things just wouldn't have worked out well. It's as if God knows what he's doing, because he does. So this reunion, he said, I want you to go back. And he gives them all kind of stuff. I want you to go back. Get your dad. I'm going to give you wagons and everything, make the journey easy. You go back and tell your dad. So they go back. And they say, Jacob's alive. No. No. Yes, let me tell you about him. He's down there in Egypt. And guess what? He's the second highest man in the whole country of Egypt. And he wants us to come down here. And the Pharaoh went along with the plan and thought, this is good, it makes me happy. And we're going to get to go to the best land the Egyptians have, the land of Goshen. And we're going to live there. Whoa. Imagine, you see God's hand. You want to see providence? Look at Joseph. You want to see how God can take some very improbable things and some very improbable people and take things where he wants them to go? Eventually, Joseph had to cooperate, and he did in a very fine way. How does he want to use me, and how does he want to use you? What can he do through us? You know, we don't know. But if we never give him the chance, we know one thing, it'll never happen. So one of the great lessons I think that we can learn from Joseph, and there are so many things about how human beings act and how people can grow up and mature and live better and have more constructive relationships. We see here God's hand in a smart-alecky young kid who delights in taunting his brothers and eventually even his dad. He comes to be a man of great honor and integrity. If you've seen the movie The Ten Commandments, which of course everybody with an ounce of religion in them has seen it, you might remember when they're doing the exorcism, they got a mummy. Who's that? That's Joseph. He said, when we go back, because God said they were going back, when we go back, and how would he know that they got put into slavery? How would he know that their fortunes turned against them, and rather than being in this really good place, that it was the case where they're even going to start trying to kill the baby boys so they can keep them from getting be a threat? How did we ever guess that Joseph wish that he'd be taken back? Whatever happened? Well, Joseph didn't doubt it. You see, when God makes a promise, he keeps it. Sometimes we wonder, well, how can that be? I ran across one the other day on, of course, Facebook, where somebody said, I just don't see how there can be no tears in heaven. Because I'll know people I love aren't there. And there's a very simple answer to that. God says there'll be no tears in heaven, okay? So there won't be. Can I explain it? There are a lot of things I can't explain, but I can tell you, as Joseph counted on God, so we can count on him as well. Are you a Christian? That God who did that and so much more, he spoke everything into existence, you know, has offered you the most wonderful opportunity that could possibly be. To be his son. To have your sins forgiven. And to one day live with him in eternity forever. In a place beyond our ability to fathom how wonderful it will be. He sent his son to die so that we could have that. And he raised him from the dead as a guarantee. If you're in him, what I say is what will happen. If you're not a Christian, trust God. Appreciate his great gift. Believe in Jesus. Repent of your sins. Get a new mind about you. Confess openly what you believe and be buried with him in baptism for the remission of your sins. To those of us who are Christians, this is the God we serve. That mighty, amazing God who could take this boy who's taunting his parents, who they're going to murder, and then they sell into slavery, and he can turn all that into an amazing story of eventually getting into the promised land because he promised it. What can he do with us? What can he do with me? What can he do with you? What can he do with Lehman? If we just give him a chance. If you need to respond to the invitation of Jesus, won't you do so as we stand together to sing?